Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
I just love that theme song. I do. It's like the cowboy who doesn't worry about anything, and he's out there on the range alone. But here's the deal. I am worried. I'm worried about this country, and I'm worried about what we're doing, and I'm worried about sport, and I'm worried about how we treat each other. But before I begin, and before we talk about the No Fan League, the NFL, the No Fan League, can I tell you something? There was a movie once called Spartacus. Kirk Douglas played it. The gladiators revolted. You know, they had a revolt against the emperor. They had an army. They cooked. Everyone cooked communally, and the grandmothers cooked with the little ones, and then the gladiators fought the evil Roman Empire, and that was a movie. It's also a fantasy of the left to have the gladiatorial revolt. And they're getting it now. Their fantasy is the kneeling and the fists up in the air and during the national anthem. On the other side, so they won. They're winning that argument because the coaches and the league doesn't want to upset their best athletes. And on the other side, Trump's winning. Trump demagogued the issue. He comes in. The issue was going away. It was just about a mediocre quarterback who couldn't get a job, who had cops as pigs on his socks. Colin Kaepernick, you know, loved Castro, loved Che Guevara. And I guess he had a girlfriend who helped him flower into this new man of the left that he became, even though he lived in a beautiful palace. And it was going away. And all of a sudden Trump comes in and he says, let's fire the sons of bitches or whatever he said. And that blew oxygen into it. So he wins because he puts himself on the side of the flag and of patriotism. And both these sides win. You know, they both get what they want. You know who doesn't get what they want? Alejandro Villanueva, the tackle from the Pittsburgh Steelers who was standing outside at Sunday's game, and he sang the national anthem with his hand over his heart and immediately became iconic. I even tweeted it. There must have been 600 likes to it, retweets, whatever. And he was the man who stood outside and treated the flag and the anthem with respect while his teammates were hiding into the tunnel, or so we thought. And then, what did he do the next day? He apologized. He apologized for it. He said, I'm sorry I threw my teammates under the bus. They're just as patriotic, too. Now, Alejandro Villanueva, 3 tours in Afghanistan, United States Army Ranger, recipient of the Bronze Star for having saved his companions in war. And he apologized because he was in this conflict. He didn't want to hurt his teammates. He didn't want to hurt his flag. He didn't want to hurt the soldiers that he served with, and he didn't want to hurt the coaches that had faith in him. And that's where we are now. That's where we are. We're in this place, an ugly, terrible place, done by politics on all sides. The left is trying to deconstruct the national anthem. It's one of the last things we have as a unifying principle in this country, but that's what they do. And on the other side, Trump had to blow oxygen on the flames to ignite them. And maybe ultimately it's what we have to do. We have to figure out where we are and what you're going to do about it. I mean, for me, I understand the politics, but I'm not watching anymore. No fan league. I stopped watching a while ago anyway because of the injuries. Oh, and another thing. Now, the pimps of football, in a sense, are the journalists who, the broadcast guys on ESPN who support it and who, you know, make a living out of it, even though they know that it's creating brain damage. They know that it creates brain damage in children. They know this now. We know this. And they're making a living and they're worried about losing that living. And so what do they do now that Trump gets involved? They have all this righteous indignation. Oh, Trump, you suck, Trump. How dare you, Trump? How dare you, Villanueva, they said. How dare you show up your teammates, Villanueva? I heard that. How dare you show up your teammates? This is where we are, okay? And I'm going to suggest something. You don't have to go to a bar and watch football. You can go to the Globe Pub up north on Irving Park, watch some real football with the feet. They don't sing the national anthem. Great athletes. They play football. And the other thing, November 11th, that weekend, second weekend in November is Veterans Day. And if you think that ridiculous chorus show that you saw on that we saw the other night on Monday Night Football, where Jerry Jones kneels with his team, like the chorus line before the national anthem. Then they get up, and then they salute the national anthem. It's like, are you kidding me? What are you doing? You're playing this game. You're kneeling. You're standing. Virtue signaling. Virtue signaling is passé. It's like, I don't know what's passé now. Like corduroy jackets, okay? Corduroy sports coats. And bell bottoms. I don't know if they're back in style now, but it's that kind of thing. Virtue signaling is getting old. And what really gets old fast is when I have to see a United States Ranger having to apologize for saluting the flag because he doesn't want to let down his team. That to me is heartbreaking, people. It's heartbreaking, and I'm just sick of the whole thing. So from now on, because of the way you handled this, creating a hero out of Kaepernick, creating a hero out of Trump, creating a hero out of all this back and forth, and spitting on the flag in the process, to me, the national anthem is important. You know why? I'm an immigrant's son, and how do you become American when you're little and you're in a country that you don't really, you know, I spoke Greek before I spoke English. So how do I know? Well, you play American sports, okay? You play baseball. You play football. You stand before the Pledge of Allegiance. You sing the national anthem. And you know why they did it? Because we're all from somewhere else. We are all from different countries, immigrants. And how do you bind a people together so that we don't go our separate ways, so that we don't just live in our identity bubble? You have them cleave to an idea. And the idea is that this is the greatest country on earth, and it is. Did we have problems? Did we do terrible things? Yes. Are we human? Yes. Did we sin? Yes. Was there slavery? Yes. Was there Reconstruction? Yes. Were blacks oppressed? Yes. On and on and on. But you know what? This country also elected an African-American twice to the presidency, something we're forgetting. And our police, sometimes violent with African-Americans? Yes. Are they brutalized themselves by dealing in High crime, poor neighborhoods? Yes. All that may be true or not true. All I know is this. If we don't have the flag, if we don't have a common understanding, a place where we can be together, we could have the anthem. That's a unifying thing. We can have sport. I could sit next to somebody who's a total communist. I do it all the time in soccer. And guess what? We talk soccer. It's great. NFL, you are the no fan league from now on. And I will enjoy watching the mental and emotional and symbolic Gumbyization, where you turn like Gumby and basically bend and twist to accommodate your revenue stream and the symbolism that has gotten out of control.
They got players for an anthem, now choose to kneel. Soon their golden goose will be a big value meal. Got guys raising fists, guys on a knee. These schmucks will soon be earning Copernic's salary. They're burning with anger, ironic, all right. Cause all my rowdy friends are burning jerseys tonight.
Speaking of all this stuff, the symbolism, the politics, the no fun league, the signifying the...
No fan league.
Did I say no fun league? It's fun now.
Sure.
It's fun now if you're a political type.
Right.
But I go to politics. I do politics for a living. I want to get away from it on Saturday and Sunday if I'm watching sports, Jeff Carlin. Don't you?
I do, but it's tougher and tougher. I mean, I try to unplug on the weekends if I can, but oh, man.
I'm going to have to do it and become a real sportsman again, fish and hunt. In the meantime, we're going to have a visit from a new friend of our podcast from Norwegian Public Radio, a journalist there, Matthias Nylena, who emailed me about a column I'd written about the First Amendment. And then I sent it to Jeff. Jeff sent it back to him. And so he's doing the interview on our podcast, and we'll sit down and talk in a sec. Okay?
Yeah, that'll work.
So he's going to come in. We're going to see. He's here. Matthias.
He's traveled a long way, John. Yeah. But you and I have done some traveling, although not abroad, domestically. I just got back from Maine. You were in Wisconsin for a family affair. And
tell us, because we had a little hiatus from the podcast. People were saying, where's the podcast? It's all Jeff's fault. He went to Maine. If you on Facebook, you saw these lovely pictures of Jeff and friends out there with the lobster roll and Christine doing a sort of a plie, some ballerina move, beautiful Maine countryside.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Oh, it was a great trip, John. We went out there. A friend of Christine's, one of her closest friends growing up, is getting married to a nice man in Maine, Erica and David. And so we were out there to see, he's from Maine, so we went out there to see to see the sights and take part in their wedding. And it was a lot of fun. It was a working wedding trip because I had some stuff to do. And Christine had to do all sorts of things for the wedding because she was essentially the maid of honor. So she was running around.
What did you have to do? You had to drink beer and eat lobster rolls, man.
Well, I had to keep an eye on things back here and make sure the Rokan show was doing just fine without me.
Oh, so you were producing on your cell phone in Maine.
Yeah, and I had to do some editing for podcasting purposes, for other podcasts. It's just stuff that I'm just...
Oh, for the real podcast.
Yeah, for
this one.
Wow, this is
one that pays. Hey, sponsors, you want to call us? Come on, man.
How about them Weber Grill folks?
Yeah, Weber Grill. Come on, somebody sponsor this thing. What about all these, aren't there great restaurants in this town?
Sure.
Do I have to beg you guys? My God.
We're not looking for free meals. We're just looking for someone to put their name behind us.
Put the name behind
Maine was great. I loved Maine.
You did?
Yeah, really nice.
The lobster rolls in Maine versus lobster rolls in Chicago.
It's interesting because out there it's kind of like takeaway food, or it's like, it's really like going to a hot dog stand and getting a hot dog and like, oh, it's a good hot dog because it's, you know, at the moment where you are.
Yeah, like Fat Johnny's.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. But it's not gourmet. I mean, you're not going to be like, oh, this is the most great. Now, in Chicago, they've got to do the opposite, the inverse of it. It's got to be gourmet. It's got to be over the top. It's
Shaw's.
Got to be. Right. It's got to
like the Shaw's or the food truck one.
Right. Right. It's got to be all that. And then somewhere else, why would you pay $14 for it?
What do they cost in Maine?
In Maine, it was $14.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was expensive. But it's fresh. I mean, that lobster was caught that morning or the day before. I mean, it was so fresh and so good, and it was incredible.
Is there nothing tastier than, you know what, like the cold lobster?
Yeah.
All right, you could just, what, get that for nothing, right? Or is it very expensive?
It's still expensive. I mean, it's not cheap, but it's
you walk down to the dock.
Yeah.
You have the old guy, the Gloucester fisherman with the pipe.
Right.
Right? Like, right in Maine?
Mm-hmm.
Maine, not New Hampshire. New Hampshire is potatoes.
Right.
Maine is lobster.
Exactly.
Right?
It was great, though. So Christine and I, we spent most of the, we went in on a Thursday and we came back on a Monday. Well, we spent most of Monday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The wedding was Saturday, doing, and even Sunday, doing wedding things and that all stuff.
You had the suit on, I saw
right.
that.
So
it
then
nice.
Sunday, we did a brunch at this beautiful home of the groom's parents on this big lake in Maine, in Lewiston, Maine, Auburn, Maine,
who
rather.
Who cooked?
The bride cooked brunch.
Oh.
She was insistent on cooking us all brunch, which was amazing. But it
what,
was great.
Did she have any little scones or what?
She had scones, she had
so,
frittatas.
So
it was
frittatas
great.
In
yeah.
Maine?
Little, yeah. But she's not
Excuse
from
me.
She's from
oh
yeah, she's from here.
Oh,
but
I thought she was from
the groom was. But it was a blast. But then Christine and I took the car and we drove, went to the coast, just drove northeast to hit the coast, and then just took county roads, and it was zigzagging along the coast all the way down to Boston. And it was fun. It was.
Did you stop and find some pie?
We didn't find any pie.
Wait, I didn't think you would be like, you know, looking for those little handmade signs like homemade
well,
pie.
Well, you know, the unfortunate thing is that we were out of season because the season on the coast in Maine is really ends Labor Day, and we were, you know, a few weeks beyond that. So a lot of the regular shops were not open. They're closed.
They're closed.
For the season. Yeah, so
they're all down in Marco Island picking
so,
up there,
right? So
right, picking up the destroyed house, right?
Yeah. So we didn't get to do a lot of the super touristy things, but we did. It was beautiful. I mean, it was just nice, relaxing drive along the coast. And we would, you know, if we saw a state park we saw called Mackworth Island, and it was just this little island off the coast that was home to a state park and a school for deaf, and it was really cool. And we, you know, walked around. It was a nice half-mile hike around this island, and it was fun and foggy, and we enjoyed it.
Any Stephen King moments?
Well, sort
New
of.
England,
well,
you know,
we, absolutely, because
right?
the roads are terrifying
right?
in Maine. And so at night when we were driving and
Any
getting
clowns?
Lost and
no
fog,
clowns.
No clowns. We did find Massacre Pond. Yeah, Massacre Pond.
Pardon? Pray tell.
we were driving along. We come see the sign for Massacre Pond off of Massacre Pond Road.
Right, right.
I'm like, oh, my God. So Christine starts looking it up, and then we got distracted by something else. And so I didn't know the origins of it until just yesterday. When
Which
I was,
is?
Which is.
Or which are.
Which are. I got sucked into this history of Scarborough, Maine, which is where this happened. And all the way back to like 1590 when like the first set encampment was there, all the way through. So around, I think it was like 1790s, there was a gentleman whose his family had established a trading post out there and was trying to potentially quell the Indians to make it more of a civil society, if you will.
During the French and Indian Wars.
Right. And so then he, his family and his men, his battalion, his garrison, if you will, was overrun by Indians, and they killed everybody. They killed 18 people in one evening. And it was at this garrison that was on this pond. And so originally it was called the Great Pond, but then after this they named it Massacre Pond.
Did you have, like, while you're driving, did you have, like, the soundtrack from Last of the Mohegans? Right? No?
Nope, not so much.
That would have been something. Too bad you didn't do that. So the Indians kill, or the Native Americans killed all the white settlers, huh?
Yeah, they
this after all the times they had been killed,
right?
Because
sure.
you know, I want to be politically correct. Everyone has the right to say anything or kill anybody in history, right?
I guess so. And
John,
how about you? How was your search of food in Wisconsin?
Thanks everybody in Facebook and Jeff too, because people, I said that impromptu, right? We're going up for a. for a soccer game. Peter, my son, our son Peter, had a soccer game in Wisconsin, and there were so many. Here's the problem, everybody. You gave me so many ideas, and then what happened? We got a late start. My idea was we go early. I look at, you know, I can research, look early. No. We had to leave late. And then John was like freaking out in the car screaming and wasn't smoking. So I couldn't find my vape. And so we got there in time. Three traffic jams around Milwaukee, kept going, and finally got to the game. And they won, thank God. And then coming back, we had something that evening, so I couldn't stop at the supper clubs. I couldn't stop all the and the one you recommended, yes. Which was what?
The Hobo Corner, just north of Milwaukee, near Hunting. I think it's Huntington Beach State Park.
Put the address down.
I sent a link to
Did
it.
Did you?
For right off the highway, it's great.
Was it?
It's I've been there a couple times. I like to go camping in the campground up there, and then head into Milwaukee for
what? Good burgers or what?
Hey, Greasy Spoon. So they do a good. There's a good matzo ball soup, and
the Belden Deli on Clark Street. Yeah, I remember that.
Corned beef hash. They do a corned beef hash. It was pretty good. They have nice homemade pies.
I want to go back, and we're gonna go back, and I'm gonna. I have to read some of these on the air, and there were some like. Finally, I went to the one place Tom Adar, a reader, suggested, the one that has the face burgers and the cows that I sent to you. Coops, cops. And I'm running around Sheboygan. I thought it was in Sheboygan. So I'm asking this woman, do you know a place named Cops or Coops that has face burgers? She's like, pardon me? Like, people were getting upset. They weren't helping me. I was like, man, I got an hour. I got to do this. Well, we stopped in. I know what a face burger is. Frozen custard. It was the whole thing was ruined because there were a million Cub fans from the Milwaukee game, and they kind of ruined it. I have to say, Cub fans,
you don't travel well.
When you don't, you know, when you use a washroom, Cub fans.
We're used to troughs. Come on. That's.
I don't feel like eating much after that experience.
Great honor to be here at the WGN, world's greatest newspaper radio, and to be a part of John's podcast. Great stuff.
Matthias Nyland.
Nylena.
Nylena, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry for being foreign.
No. I would have been foreign, but my parents...
John technically is Canadian.
Oh, you are?
I'm half Canadian and half monarchist.
Yeah. But I guess for some people and... like back then, Canadians wanted to be Americans, but now it's the other way around. A lot of Americans want to be Canadian.
I wished I will move to Norway.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
I have a feeling I want to go there. Mm. Our guest today is Matthias Nylena.
Hi. Yeah.
Hello. And he's a Norwegian journalist.
I am.
From the, what is it, the National Public Radio
yes,
Norway.
The NRK, it's the equivalent to the BBC in England or perhaps NPR here, I guess.
And he had emailed me a while back, I guess about a week ago. He's in Chicago, Jeff Carlin, and wanted to interview me. And rather than do one of those things with the NPR locally when the national people come in, to interview the provincial.
They talk very quiet. They say, John,
provincial,
we want to talk to you about your ideas. Mm.
We want your rough-hewn Midwestern ideas. When they come to talk to the barbarian, usually they want to walk on a street where you can hear the sound of the clicking of the heels in the maybe a puddle. Mm. No Peruvian flutes, although they do that often. For ambiance.
Yes.
I don't know why the Peruvian flutes.
I'm not sure.
Always with NPR. Right?
I don't know. Maybe they have the rights to it.
Yeah. So Matthias asked me about the First Amendment.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
What, right? Is that what you want to talk about?
Well, when I went here for some personal reasons as well, as I told you before this podcast, I spent a period of time actually going through junior high in Evanston, north of Chicago. Nichols Middle School.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So my dad, he worked here in Chicago for a period of time in the 90s. So me and my brother, we're back now. And I always bring my recorder. And I was like, can I do? What should I bring back home of material? And
Bring me back.
Yeah. And then I was thinking about this whole free speech debate going on at American universities, and Google helped me find out that the University of Chicago has made a statement last year, and I just up in Evanston there's this Northwestern University, so I brought my recorder there yesterday and talked to some of the students actually.
And how profoundly disappointed were you in the understanding of their own constitution?
Well, I've read your column, "The Lies We Were Told About Who Would Silence Free Speech," I guess they haven't read it, your column.
Right. It's if they read it at Northwestern, usually they're shunned.
Mm. So
they have to wear a cross, like an Orthodox cross, on their forehead.
I thought it was a K for Cass.
I guess what they were saying was that they support free speech, but they feel that a lot of people exploit it. That's what they feel. And they feel that safe spaces is a good thing and important to them. And they also understand the concept of trigger warnings and feel that that's also needed. It's kind of a debate that we don't have in Norway at this point, for the most part. But I brought my recorder here to ask questions about it and find out, because this is it seems like a big issue here, and someone has called it a moral panic. I don't know. How do you feel, John?
Right. I'm being interviewed.
You're being interviewed.
Sorry, I'm a journalist.
No. And is this going part of your program?
We're going to give this to him.
Okay, good. All right. So that's good that I'm being interviewed, because many people write me, the ones that write me in literate fashion, not the red crayons. The red crayons, though, I enjoy those too.
Those are colorful.
Yeah, those are colorful. They're red. They're bold. They're usually full of words like you,
right.
So-and-so, you know. Well, free speech is, I was looking at Norway's free speech, and Norway, please correct me, has prohibitions against hate speech, what is called hate speech.
Yeah.
My question is, when you, notice how I'm turning the tables on you, when a government or political entity defines what is appropriate speech and what is not, how far do they continue to go?
Well, it's there's been this debate this summer.
With the elections and so forth?
Yeah, but it was a neo-Nazi march. They had a neo-Nazi march in the south of Norway, and some people, or a lot of people, were really offended by it. Nazism in Europe is really, you know, the... when it comes to free speech, racism and Nazism is where it usually ends, you know, the debate, what can be allowed. That's when hate speech comes in. Some people were feeling that free speech had gone too far now with allowing a neo-Nazi march and actually arresting the protesters.
For speaking.
Blocking the way that the Nazis were marching, so they brought some of the protesters in custody, and not the neo Nazis.
They brought the neo Nazis in.
No, the people protesting.
The counter protesters.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, right. So we have had that debate now, but I don't know. I think the situation here in U.S. is a lot more heated now and polarized. So in Norway, we kind of read the newspapers, which are filled with stuff from the U.S., and we're like, what's going on here? Because it seems like the two sides, the left and the right, don't understand each other at all anymore. So we're kind of curious about that. I don't know.
Clearly becoming more tribal.
Yeah,
we're all getting into our tribes. We pound our drums. We shout at across the campfire into the dark and scream about apparitions we may or may not see. That is a function of tribal politics and social media and bubbles and so forth, where we get into our own bubble. We select our own news. We select our social media friends. We become... although, I think that there's a fundamental misunderstanding of free speech that I think many Americans use it in use the words without understanding what it means. Free speech, the First Amendment, is a protection from the government against any government telling you what you can say or what not to say. And the belief and understanding by our founders is that any time government would regulate speech, the political factions or so forth would tend to ratchet that down even more for their own advantage. As we understand, human beings are always seeking their self-interest, and that if you regulate hate speech, you regulate hate speech. What's next? If I say I'm a Norwegian, and I say I don't like so many immigrants from Syria coming into my country, is that hate speech?
No, that's not hate speech. But in all of Europe and Scandinavia for the last couple of years, there's been this shift where people who have been critical or scared that the amount of immigrants might
ruin their culture,
and ruin the welfare state, the system. That they feel that they have been labeled as racists because of having those opinions, and there's been many examples of that. And for the last couple of years, there's been a shift that has made it, I think, easier to say that you are critical or skeptical to. Open the borders, you know, and without the fear of being labeled a racist.
So if I say, if I'm in Norway and I say I see 30,000 or whatever it was applying for asylum from Syria, I would say, if I said, I'm concerned that so many people coming into our country would burden our welfare program, or it would be costly, and it would, then I would be okay. If I said, I'm worried that 30,000 people would come from Syria, affect the balance of our culture, and also, you know, equality of women and so forth, then I might be accused of hate speech.
It's easier to, or it's more, it's less controversial to use an economic argument than a cultural argument.
Correct.
Yeah, I'd say.
And here we have the famous case of the Christian bakers who had gay clients. They loved their cakes. They liked their cookies and so forth. Then the gay clients asked, please do our wedding cake. And they said, we can't do your wedding cake because we're Christian. And that's what you are doing is violates our religious belief. Well, then what happened was the government came down upon them, and they were forced to pay a fine, and they were subject to all sorts of complaints. I wonder, and the left supported that idea. I would wonder if, say, you had two Jewish bakers, husband and wife, who were asked, please, by Nazis, please bake a cake for us to commemorate our whatever ridiculous, evil Nazi thing that we do. Even though I'm not comparing Nazis to homosexual or gay marriage, I'm just trying to say in terms of their belief, they would probably be supported by the left, right? And by most of the right, I'd say. How dare you ask these poor people from families who had survived the Holocaust to bake cakes for these wretched Nazis. And in that sense is the problem. Once the government begins to play in that arena, you're going to have pushback and pullback. We see it now, our misunderstanding with it, with free speech on our college campuses, where students believe that they go to college to have a safe space, which is what? Please don't challenge me. Please don't send any challenging ideas my way, because I might be uncomfortable and triggered or whatever the ridiculous terminology is.
But I have a question for you, because yeah. in your column you're saying that the left is the ones undermining free speech in this yes. country right now. But the news.
Of course, I'm not of the left.
Okay, I just
my perfect freedom is okay. that I'm not.
Okay, but right now there's this other news story about the American sports.
Oh yes, of course.
Wouldn't you and the whole take a kneel thing? One could argue that they are just practicing free speech and doing what they feel. But couldn't you say
of
that?
Of course, you could argue that.
This is the right that's attacking them, right?
Here's the difference. The difference is there was a Google employee just a few months ago. A Google employee, he writes a paper to the Google bosses. Why don't we have more women in the technical field? Okay? He wrote an opinion that may have been controversial or may have not been. It was seen as controversial by many on the left. The man was fired. Okay? He was exercising his free speech, but the company also exercised its right as a private concern to say, no, we don't want you to talk like this. You're fired. The National Football League is a private business. It is, in some respects, tax exempt, at least their national headquarters are. They get all sorts of publicity from the newspapers that subsidizes these sporting events. I would much rather we cover soccer, particularly international soccer.
Yeah.
And to my Norwegian friends, please, I hope someday that your football will
yeah.
increase.
Yeah, no, you're hitting
right?
a weak spot there.
Yes, I'm sorry, I don't mean to. I love the game. But the difference, of course, is that in the one instance, government is not involved here. This is a private thing. So it's not a free speech issue in that respect.
So because of the NFL being private and the universities being public, you can't compare the two?
Well, you can, and people often do. Mm. But there is a fundamental misunderstanding between the protection... The First Amendment protects us against our government from telling us what we can say and what we can't say.
Yeah, yeah.
The players are under contract to the NFL, which is a private business. They choose to kneel or raise a fist and disrespect the flag, at least in the minds of many Americans, particularly and in my mind as well. There's the conflict. It's a cultural issue, a cultural conflict. And in many respects, I find it to be manipulated. It's almost like, as I said in the monologue, the left has sought a sort of revolt of the gladiators, sort of like Spartacus. It fits a narrative. Not that the players are slaves by any means. They are well-compensated millionaires. Their issue is, of course, police brutality.
Yeah.
But it's not a free speech issue in the sense that government is not telling them, saying what you can say or what you can't say. So it's all out in the open. People are discussing it, arguing. I like it. I like the fact that people are arguing and discussing what is the role of patriotism. What is the role of culture? What is the role of country?
But should we respect it? Yeah.
But it's not a free. It's not free speech in the sense. I mean, it is free speech. It is not First Amendment protected speech.
But
because the owners of the company of the NFL company could just very well say, our rules are, we have stated in our rule book, our rules are you must stand at attention for the national anthem and show respect. And those who don't shall be punished. That's the rule.
Why?
Because they made that rule. I don't know
forever?
Why. I don't know if... I was at a game last summer. Let's see who played. Olympiacos played PSG. Okay?
Yeah.
There was some... And then there was an American national anthem played before the game.
Oh.
At Soldiers Field.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is built to commemorate it should be a proper football stadium with feet stadium.
Absolutely.
Some British people turned that we were with, Brits turned to us and said, to my sons and I, you Yanks are crazy. What is with the playing national anthem? It's not even your national team.
No.
Right?
No.
These are two private teams.
Yeah.
And the anthem in terms of the American football has been used, and baseball, has been used for years, right, Jeff Carlin? I'd say.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right?
Decades.
For a century.
It means, yeah, decades yeah. upon yeah. decades. I mean, yeah.
And I really don't understand why it should be, to tell you the truth. I mean, when our national team plays, we should have it. For private teams, I don't know, but we do.
And yeah,
now
we
there's
do.
A fight over what constitutes respect, right? But the government, President Trump became involved demagoguing the issue.
But that's because he sees that this is potentially a good story for his fan base.
Just as the raise the fist, kneel on the ground, disrespect it is disrespectful to do that. It's not respectful to kneel during the national anthem. You stand at attention with your hand on your heart. But that imagery is a good thing in a sense, at least to the left, which hopes to deconstruct this one of these last unifying symbolisms in the country. That's what the left does. They deconstruct. So you have these two issues and two cultural forces, and you have actors in between, not the players. I'm talking about the political actors on all sides who would manipulate that for their own purposes. We're grown-ups. We're adults. We understand that that's what people do, to symbolism, right? That's what politicians do. They manipulate it for their own purpose.
But this politicization of patriotism, because you're ending up now arguing who's the patriot and who's not.
Correct. In a sense, right?
In a sense, when it was actually, it started out as a form of activism towards police brutality.
It originally did.
So
the man who started it, Colin Kaepernick, used to wear socks on his feet that had pictures of police officers as pigs. And that is incendiary to some.
Yeah, of course.
And it also, this whole thing started with him not taking a knee.
He was sitting.
He was sitting. And when people lambasted him for disrespecting the anthem,
then he began to kneel
and realized that it was probably not a good idea to completely disregard the event. And he said, all right, you're right. I don't try to disrespect all the great people and great things that happen in this country.
Right.
But I want to make a point. So I'm going to genuflect during the anthem.
But what would your suggestion be? How should they have reacted?
I'm not going to tell people how to. I'm not a doctrinaire. I'm not in another national government to tell people what to think or not think. I'm going to comment on the culture of it. There was a professional football player Anthony Villanueva.
Alejandro.
Alejandro Villanueva. Do you hear of him?
No.
Three-time Afghanistan war tour.
Graduate of West Point.
Officer in the United States Ranger, Army Rangers, yeah. An elite unit, mm-hmm. who then, after six years away from football and all this combat, decorated with the silver, the Bronze Star for saving his companions in war, mm-hmm. Tried out for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he made the team. Well, at Soldier's Field just the other day,
yeah.
he was depicted with his hand on his heart, singing the national anthem, mm. while his teammates were in the tunnel,
mm.
basically hiding. They didn't want to come out.
Yeah, the coach didn't want to put any of the players, want to have them be involved in this anyway.
Right.
He was just trying to keep them above board on it, but it was a
This became mistake. A huge okay. issue.
So he became a symbol.
Right. He became yeah. a symbol of those who support the flag and the honor of the honoring the national anthem.
Was that intentionally from him, or was it just...
He just did what was right to him. I mean, to him, and most people who have served or have yeah. military families, yeah. the national anthem plays and it gets your respect top to bottom. It's a right. stop moment, hat comes off, hand over heart. And so he was doing what was right in his mind.
Okay. If I see Norwegians next to me in a soccer game at the Chicago Fire, which is a great league, all the Norwegian people should join and watch the MLS.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I believe we have had players in the MLS, actually.
Yes.
From
Norway.
Sure. Yeah. Mm.
And, I'm trying to think of maybe our center back, right?
I think so.
Maybe Kappelman?
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, if I see Norwegians wearing their hats during the national anthem and chewing yeah. gum or smoking or eating a pie while we're singing the national anthem... Yeah. It might offend me a little bit because until I realize, oh, you're not of this country,
yeah.
right?
We're not as we have a different kind of feelings towards national or the patriotism than you guys have, and a lot of countries do.
Mine is different. I think many do.
And John, I looked it up. So the national anthem here started during a Cubs Red Sox game in 1918, shortly after the U.S. had entered World War I.
Yeah.
The largest race riot in the city's history.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
It was here, and then they were marching and demonstrating. You know, they had a military band come out before the game and do some drills. Mm. So during the seventh inning stretch, that band broke spontaneously into the Star Spangled Banner. Everybody thought it was a great moment, and then from there on, it became. This
Remember
thing.
At that time, and this is something that Norway until recently dealt with, and. Mm. Europe hadn't dealt with was at that time there was a wave of immigrants to the country.
Yeah.
We had people. I'm an immigrant son. My father's an immigrant who came to this country after fighting the communists and the Germans in Greece. Okay.
Okay.
And
yeah.
the Italians.
Yeah.
So for all the immigrants coming in, the idea, these symbolic appeals to national unity were extremely important as part of an assimilation into the greater American culture. Mm. To destroy that or to deconstruct it, as some on the left are trying to do, I understand that it shouldn't be sporting events, professional sporting events probably never should have happened. But it did. Pardon me. And that, as an immigrant son, my father wanted me to play soccer. Okay? Mm-hmm. I said, no, Daddy. I wasn't born in the village like you. I was born in America, and we play with our helmets. Right? I wanted to be an American. And as an immigrant, you play the sport of the country that you're in. You seek these symbols and almost secular prayers like the national anthem, the Pledge of Allegiance. All these things were taught to us as children of immigrants in an effect to bind us to a national identity, a national understanding, common, though we come from all different backgrounds, races and creeds, and there's no country like that in the world like this one, where we bring everyone from everywhere.
But have you? Do you feel like you've been successful in including everyone? Because isn't part of the situation here that a lot of people feel that they're not, and they're that they're being discriminated?
I think that people do feel that way.
Yeah.
The comparison, but I'm not going to tell people how they feel in their own heart. But I would tell you that the United States of 2017 is not the Jim Crow United States of 1959. Let's not forget, we elected a black man president twice in recent years, two times, right? We don't have that same Jim Crow attitude. There are people that do have racial issues on all sides of this, right? And people do self-segregate based on their ethnicity. We understand that. And there have been police issues dealing with poor people generally. The most powerless people tend to have conflicts with police in every nation that I know of. At a higher rate than do the wealthy or the upper middle class.
So do you understand the Black Lives Matter movement?
What do you mean understand it?
Well, do you sympathize with it? Or how? Because I've only read like different stories in Norwegian newspapers about it, but I don't have a sense of how controversial it is or how unifying it is in the U.S. now.
It is I believe it's an effort to organize African Americans politically after there was a sort of period, a lull period during Obama's administration.
Even before that, John, I mean, it's a reactionary to probably a decade or so of leaderlessness and where a lot of black activists have essentially become disillusioned or have shifted away from their core beliefs and are more concerned with their own benefits.
Also,
and there has been this kind of there haven't been any strong front and center black leaders who are trying to help all blacks. It's mostly, as it stands, upper middle class blacks who are saying, well, we're for the blacks, but then they make deals with Democrats that screw over blacks, or they make deals with Republicans that screw over blacks that are poorer. And so this younger, less effectual population of black people are trying to coalesce around an idea, and this is what they've come up with.
So Black Lives Matter is kind of a new attempt to unify all African Americans in somehow a new civil rights movement.
Well, perhaps not civil rights, but a leverage or power movement.
Okay.
And the anytime you try to do that, you need to have an enemy, right? President Trump provided oxygen to this debate when he said, you know, fire the son of a bitch on the field, right? He did that.
Yeah.
He fueled it.
Yeah.
And the enemy was, in the original sense, Black Lives Matter, were the police departments. And the police departments historically have had problems and issues in dealing with the poorest people and black people.
Mm.
Historically, it's not a pretty picture to think of a civil war, Reconstruction, white oppression, the Ku Klux Klan, and all the rest.
Mm.
And I think that we were talking earlier about how people live in their bubbles.
Mm.
I think that it's all too easy for white Americans to sort of say, as I did earlier, not that I'm criticizing myself, but, oh, there's been a black man elected twice for president, which is significant.
Yeah.
But you have to think in terms of how others think, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't do what was expected of him by many people in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And the history of Reconstruction, Jim Crow, all that other stuff is still alive in people, right? They still remember it. They think about it. They talk about it. So that the modern urban, white, middle or upper middle class person is a disconnected person from history in many respects, from their own families, from their own culture in many respects, transient. We're on our phone, we just do this and move on, and other people aren't. In the black inner cities and in the rural South.
Mm.
And then you have the North, you know, the sort of the, what do you call it, the stratus. Like it could be a town, a city of, on the skies.
Yeah.
And that's where we are.
But in Norway, we are a small country, you know, and pretty, we've been very lucky. We're a very lucky country. We've had a lot of luck, but we've also...
A lot of hard work.
Well, we found oil. That's what happened.
Let's not say that that's not good.
No, but we hit the jackpot. But
and
now,
great seafood. Bad soccer, but it's going to be
yeah,
good.
Yeah, but now we're like discussing what should we do with the rest of the oil because of the climate and everything. So that's a whole new story.
It's a great luxury to be able to be wealthy and guilty about your wealth.
Yes.
At the same time.
So we are.
It's a lot better yeah. than if you're not wealthy and you're starving and you wish you had it.
Yeah, right? I know. It's a lot better.
Ask some of the villages in Greece in the south.
But we have...
No oil, just rocks.
Just rocks.
Right.
In Norway, we are big fans of the dialogue.
Yeah.
People getting together to speak and to understand each other. And with this polarized situation here in the U.S., it's wouldn't it be the best if you tried to talk to each other and understand each other's points of views instead of like...
That's what I do for a living.
Yeah, yeah. Because I feel like there's this demonizing going on both sides.
Of course there is.
As
long as when you eliminate or deconstruct... to use the term quite popular or at least understood in Europe, particularly over the past 50 years. When we deconstruct institutions, what is left? And everyone should think of that. Everyone should think of that. So some see the national anthem as a song of oppression in a country where millions and millions of people are trying to come to flee oppression. The use of symbols in politics is never going to stop, right? It will never stop. It was the Romans, kings of old, even the Franks, all of history has used this stuff, and it's being used now.
Hmm. Where do you think this is going to end? Are you an optimist or a pessimist regarding where the U.S. is heading in the future?
I'm a conservative, and that should define me as being a pessimist, correct?
Yeah.
In that I believe that man is, flawed and must be, and we need to control some of the worst impulses. However, I do think it should be interesting. Okay, just in terms of football and this issue, Veterans Day is coming. That's a big day.
For a foreigner, what is Veterans Day?
Veterans Day is the day that we celebrate the veterans who fought in our wars. Yeah. What is the NFL going to do then? What is the NFL going to do on I think it's November 11th or 13th.
11th.
And there's a big move to boycott the entire NFL, stop watching.
I have a sense that offending veterans must be the most offensive thing to do in the U.S.
Yeah.
in total.
It's a big one.
That's a big one.
I'll tell you, okay, Norway's big in hockey, right? You have a good hockey.
Oh, no. We're good at cross-country skiing because no one else is doing
that's
it.
That's
good.
That's what
I've
doing.
I've heard that joke
is
before.
Is that Telemark in Norway?
We do Telemark skiing.
Right, but Telemark is...
Yeah, it's in Norway, yeah.
And that is the site of one of the great gorilla enterprises, right? The heroes of where they stopped
the
Norwegians,
absolutely. One of our
great skiers,
yes,
and soldiers stopped Hitler's heavy water experiments. They could have changed this whole debate.
Yes.
We wouldn't be talking about freedom of speech. Then.
Norway prevented Hitler from getting
the nuclear bomb.
Yes,
right.
So.
And
you guys have been coasting on that for a while. Come on, give us something else.
I'm sorry, I haven't. I'm sorry to the Norwegian people who are listening to this that was not the first thing out of my mind. seriously,
no,
gentlemen, that is something that's not understood in the United States and should be more than a movie with Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
And speaking of Kirk Douglas, remember he was also in the movie Stanley Kubrick, the great director, Spartacus.
Yeah, he was.
Which is what we're, you know, we're seeing the Spartacus League, the left, the communists, the vote, the kneel on the...
And speaking of hockey, John, I want to get this off my chest because I'm a huge hockey fan.
Yes, you
that's
are.
My favorite.
Yeah. And what would happen? Let me ask
Jeff, here, I'm gonna...
What would happen, Jeff Carlin, if there was disrespect to the American national anthem at a hockey game?
So here's the thing. So in hockey, hockey is very international sport.
Would fight break out?
No, Americans are in the minority as far as current players.
Yeah, Swedes and Russians and Finns and
Canadians. I mean, there's plenty of other people. So when the American national anthem is played on a team, and a team stands there on the ice, majority of the players, it's not their anthem. They're kind of don't care. Not that they don't care, but it's not important to them. They all stand there, and you can see them. A lot of them are thinking about their grocery list or what they're going to do after the game.
Yeah.
And then the American players have their hand over their heart, and they stand there at attention.
And you're good with that.
And they're good with that. And then I'm good with that because the foreign players, they at least show the respect. They go out there, they're there, and they say, hey, you know what? This is a thing. I want to make tons of money in this country. All right, I'll hang out here. I'll stand here at attention, and I'll at least look like I care.
But
they show respect. Yeah. So, like in soccer, okay, same. We have in the Chicago Fire, they stand for the attention. And all the players from Schweinsteiger, of course, who never would do anything out of bounds.
Absolutely.
And at least on the field. And others like this, right? Or my son's college soccer team. Mm.
But what
Guatemalans, Mexicans, from all over the hemisphere aren't American.
But what if the U.S. did something horrible to Finland, say? And a Finnish hockey player refused to stand for the national anthem. Would you understand him?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well,
oh, yeah. Absolutely, understand him. But especially I would also understand when the coach of that team or the owner of that team would release him because they wouldn't want that on the ice in front of the audience they're trying to entertain.
But wouldn't? Because it's entertainment.
Right. That's all it is.
And the difference between the First Amendment, which is about the government not telling us what to do, and entertainment, which is what we're arguing about. Mm. These are entertainers. Think of it. Sportsmen. These are entertainers. They paid to entertain. In some respects, more like the Hollywood actors are more like jesters. I would not...
Well, but they have free speech.
Pardon?
But they have free
speech. Of course
they
have free speech.
And
they
are,
and
they have some of them could have great minds and valid points.
And many do.
Yeah. So and
but it's not what I'm trying to tell you is that when we say this is a First Amendment issue, it's not really the First Amendment is protection from our government to protect our speech. Mm. When people do things in private business that is thought to be out of bounds, too conservative, the director of the founder of Mozilla, right? The Mozilla,
yep.
The Firefox, right? Mm. He was supportive of men and women being married. And for that sin, if I may use that broadly, he was ousted from the company he founded. The fellow from Google, he wrote the paper, he was ousted. So we have to think about what we're saying. Well, that's all I'm saying. It's really confusing now. People's emotions are up.
Yeah.
I would much rather perhaps they didn't have the national anthem at professional sporting events. Mm. I understand why they do. As an immigrant son who came here wanting desperately to be an American, to reject, in a sense, and that conflict that immigrants feel, rejecting the old country, the country of our parents and our grandparents, cleaving to the new through symbolism, through participation in sport and cultural events. All these things have to be considered in context.
Is there a problem that you have elected a president that is so dividing to people?
This was coming before that. The reason Trump is not, I hate to quote a famous columnist, okay, who predicted 9 months before the election of Hillary Clinton that she would lose. I hate to do that, but I have to quote him. Trump is a symptom. He's not a cause. He is a symptom of something else in the country, And once you start thinking about that, I think that's an perhaps a more, you know, a better way to understand what's going on. So, two questions before we break.
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, what are you guys, the two Norwegian brothers, what are you guys doing in Chicago for fun, man?
We're after this, we're heading up to Wicker Park to do some shopping and having a beer. And then we're, if this, there's so, it's so hot and we want to check out the city beach. Haven't been there.
Go to the beach.
Yeah. Yeah. To,
how are we doing with the E. coli on the beach?
Oh, it's
Jeff?
Good. The
E. coli?
No, you're good.
Okay.
The beaches are open for business.
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah, so we're getting going there in the afternoon to just read and have one more beer, I guess, or some soda if it's possible. And then...
Careful, you'll get taxed on that soda.
Yeah, okay.
We have a big soda tax. It's a huge issue.
And like the good tourists we are tonight, we're going out for some deep pan pizza before we're leaving tomorrow.
That's so terrible. That's not really a Chicago thing. You could mock the whole business.
Okay.
You should do a story on that. Well, you know, like a side feature. It's not really, is it?
Deep dish?
Is it not?
What's wrong
with
you?
It's not a Chicago thing.
Sure it is.
It's not. It was created. We've had this debate millions of times.
Yeah, but
it's not.
Then you're wrong.
Chicago thing. Hot dog? Did you have a hot dog?
No.
Okay, hot dog, Chicago thing, steaks. Okay,
yeah, hot dogs aren't even really a Chicago thing.
If you're
gonna say deep dish pizza doesn't qualify, then hot dogs don't qualify.
Hot dog is a Chicago thing.
This so is pizza. So is deep dish
not
pizza.
Not deep dish. Yeah, man.
Where's it come from? Where
deep
else
dish
you find
is
deep
a
dish?
Rip off. Deep dish is buy some bread. Okay.
I'm
have
leaving
some...
you guys now. I'm gonna leave you guys. Nice meeting you.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Matthias. Well, that was great, being interviewed by a journalist on my own podcast. So you hope that he puts it in context. Matthias Nylana from Norwegian Public Radio. And we had an interesting time talking to him. And he's going for deep dish pizza. He should have gone to Gene and Giorgetti, for God's sake, Jeff. And Jeff Carlin, producer of the Rokan and Anna show on WGN, the best producer in the country as far as I'm concerned, and me, your humble scribe who has to write four columns a week with no leg, man, and I hope it doesn't kill me, but I'm still going to try. Talk to you next week. Remember one thing. When you're walking and you hear your heels clicking, you know, and it's kind of an echoey walk and you're lonely and maybe there's a little foghorn in the back, and a little, you know, the sound of water dripping somewhere. Remember this. You could be on the Chicago Way.